Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people and organizations making an impact around Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us this morning is philanthropist and developer Peter Brodsky. How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing great this morning. How are you doing?
I am doing just fine. And let's talk about the big project you've been working on for years and have had so many people excited for so long. And we're talking about the vibrant mixed-use development on the corner of, I guess it's I-20 and 67 in southern Dallas, formerly called Redbird Mall. Can you tell us about how you decided to get involved with this project and where we're going with it right now?
Well, I'd be happy to. The first thing I got to tell you, though, it's not just formally called Redbird. We brought the name Redbird back because that's what the community has always called it. That's how people think of it, and that's what it is. And we call it that with pride.
Nice. So it is Redbird.
Oh, it is Redbird. You know what? They may have tried to rename it in 1998 to Southwest Center Mall, but I've yet to meet a single person that calls it anything other than Redbird.
Oh, I'm with you. That's legendary logo. That's called branding that cannot go away. Traditional branding.
Exactly. So I've already forgotten your question. Was it how did I get involved with this?
Yes, because I know it was years ago that you thought this area was ripe for development. As for a lot of people who do not know this, there are several major mega churches all up and down I-20, not too far from Redbird, and you got so many great communities right there, Duncanville, Oak Cliff, just go on and on and on, and there's so many families there, and it's like, wait a minute, this area could be just as good as, you know, North Park Center or somewhere in Frisco or anywhere else.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You know, look, I'm not from Dallas originally. I moved here in 1995. And for about the first 15 years I was here, I really had the experience that most white North Dallas people have in Dallas, which is I only hung out in North Dallas, and all I ever heard about Southern Dallas was, you know, oh, you don't want to go there.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't know any better, but around 15 years ago, I started to get more involved in the community in our city and began to spend more time in Southern Dallas and pretty quickly observed that most of the things that I'd heard about the area were just exaggerated, untrue,
mm-hmm.
And that, in fact, in certain parts of Southern Dallas, just like in certain parts of North Dallas, there are, you know, very, very vibrant middle-class communities. But when you drive around the areas, there were no commercial amenities. And, you know, you'd go into these housing developments and see beautiful houses and nice cars and families and who want nice things. And then you'd go out into the commercial parts of the same neighborhoods, and you'd see payday lending and check cashing and maybe, an auto body shop and a couple dollar stores, and there was just, that wasn't what the people who lived there wanted. And so my thought was, hey, here's an opportunity to make an investment, and, you know, and it's a money-making opportunity to fulfill the demand that's there but isn't being adequately serviced, but also to do something positive for the community and that is to give people the amenities that they want, that they can afford, and that they deserve. And the perfect place to do it was Redbird. It's in a terrific part of the city. It's mm-hmm. a solidly middle class area, and then the mall itself is very well located, and it has a real resonance with the community, because in the past it had been a high point of quality in the community, and I think that stuck with people, and it's one of the reasons why that name is so powerful to folks who live in the area.
Exactly, and I think your project is called Reimagine Redbird because you're going to make it more than just the mall. It's going to be a mixed-use development, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think completely separate and apart from issues having to do with mischaracterization of Southern Dallas, there's a whole other dynamic going on, which is that the nature of retail everywhere has changed. I don't know about you, but I did most of my Christmas shopping last year, the year before, and the year before that, lying in bed on my laptop.
Yeah.
unless you're North Park Mall, malls are generally dying around the country. And so we weren't going to be able to revitalize Redbird by sticking to a business model from 1974. And what people want today is a live, work, play model. They want to be able to go to a community, be it shops at Legacy, be it the shops at Park Lane, be it the West Village, where you can live. Some people live there. Some people work there. Some people eat there.
Mm-hmm.
Some people go to the movies there. Some people do all of the above there. But it's sort of a mini urban center.
So let me get this right, Peter.
We're doing at Redbird.
Let me get this right, Peter. In my mind, because I'm imagining this, you're looking to create an atmosphere that's somewhat like Uptown or the Bishop Arts District or one of those areas where people can stroll and they can also live.
Yeah, we are looking to provide. The reason why Uptown is so popular and the reason why the shops at Legacy are so popular is because they are providing the amenities that people want, and they are also creating an environment that really can't be replicated online. So if all you have to offer is shopping, that's going to get its lunch eaten by Amazon. But if people are coming to the site anyway because they are living there, or they are going to the doctor there, or they are working there, or they're going to do something that you can't do online, like go bowling or something like that, then you're going to create an environment where there's lots of people. It's going to create activity. And then those retail amenities and restaurants will be activated. And so we're trying to do, this is not an original idea. We are trying to essentially knock off what other people are doing. The only thing that is unique about this, and it's frankly a sad commentary that it is unique, is that it's happening in Southern Dallas in a predominantly African-American community.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? This is like I said, this is almost like people don't really know what's really over there. And I mentioned the mega churches. Let me take it a little bit further. You've got all these different colleges in that Southern Dallas area. Paul Quinn College, University of North Texas, Dallas, Dallas Baptist University, Mountain View College, and Cedar Valley College are all right there in the radius of the Redbird. And can you talk about how that has helped you actually get more, I guess, people involved and maybe corporations and businesses?
Oh, absolutely. It sounds like you're reading a slide out of my pitch deck. I've actually got a whole slide about the community amenities. Yeah, I mean, it's the reason why Redbird is the perfect area, because in addition to having a lot of people there who've got money to spend and want to spend it in their community, you've got all these community resources and facilities that draw people from all over the Metroplex into the area. You've got five major mega churches that have together about 50,000 members. You've got a couple hundred smaller churches. So you've got tens and tens of thousands of people coming to church there Sundays, Wednesdays. Their kids have church activities. They've got choir practice. And then you've got, basically, other than SMU, all of the major universities, UNT Dallas, DBU, Colquhoun College, you know, the two Dallas College campuses that you mentioned. So you've got more tens of thousands of people coming to study there. And yet with all of that activity and all of those people coming, there was nowhere for them to be. There was until we opened the Starbucks there a couple of years ago, there wasn't a single Starbucks south of I-30 in the city of Dallas. It's crazy. And so we opened a Starbucks. A lot of people up north said, what? You're going to open a Starbucks in southern Dallas? Nobody there can afford a cup of coffee. I'm like, what are you talking about? That doesn't make it. That's crazy. And of course, now it's one of the most profitable, highest revenue Starbuckses that they've got in the city.
How about number three overall?
Yeah, it's an incredibly profitable one. The line is around the block all the time. Now that thankfully people can go in and sit down again, it's hard to get a seat there. And it's because guess what? Everybody wants the same things. And you walk into that Starbucks and you see just what you see everywhere else in the city. People on their laptops, people buying their kids something to eat before or after school, people stopping in there before or after church for a cup of coffee, meeting with friends. People want those sorts of places to go, and there just aren't enough of them in the area. And Redbird seeks to be a place where there's multiple different opportunities for people to in the community to go spend time and money in their community and be provided a high quality, dignified environment where their commercial needs are satisfied.
You know, we're talking with Peter Broski, the developer Peter Broski, the reimagined Redbird, and I just look at the economic opportunities all up and down I-20 right there and where Redbird is centrally located. Again, it's closer to downtown Dallas than the Galleria. And you've got all the different people. I guess the radius down there in southern Dallas is 208 square miles. That's 54% of the city of Dallas's landmass. And all of the people there have money to spend. It's like, and there's more and more people moving to the Dallas-Fort Worth area all the time. And the growth is not just headed towards the north. It's headed west. It's headed east. And it's also headed south. Can you talk about the vision that you saw, and could you imagine the growth that's actually taking place in Dallas-Fort Worth and how this is a tremendous opportunity?
Oh, it's a huge opportunity. I mean, look, everybody knows that people are leaving California and coming to Texas. Texas is open for business, and the DFW region, in the past couple of years has been a huge beneficiary of that. The problem is that the city of Dallas hasn't benefited as much as it could have because North Dallas is full, and so now people are going to Frisco and Prosper. The big economic opportunity for this city is to help people and businesses understand that Southern Dallas is a fantastic place to move to and to locate your business. And if you look at the percentage, for instance, of office buildings in the city of Dallas, something like greater than 90% of the office space in the city of Dallas is north of I-30. Well, south of I-30, we need a lot more office space, and that's why we're creating so much at Redbird, so that we can, as a community, as a city, and as this part of the city, benefit from the huge, huge influx of people and businesses and dollars that are coming into our city.
Yes, yeah, it's amazing, the opportunity.
It is. I do want to emphasize one thing, though, that there's a lot of concern in the community about gentrification. And we've talked a lot about on this call about, you know, attracting people to the area and how close it is to downtown, et cetera. But I do want to emphasize that unlike a lot of the other developments in southern Dallas, we are not depending on new people coming into the community in order to patronize the businesses that are opening at Redbird. There is so much pent-up demand among the people who already live in southern Dallas for these sorts of amenities. This thing will do just fine if nobody moves into the area, we're trying to serve the people who already live in the area and give them what they already want, but they have to drive long distances to get. That's really what it's all about for us at Redbird, is let's serve the people who live here and want these things, but let's make it much, much easier for them to get it, whether it's a good cup of coffee or whether it's the opportunity to have your chemotherapy at a high-quality medical facility near your home. And that's what's going to happen at UT Southwestern.
Exactly. Exactly. This is so amazing, the project that you've been working on. And I was there. I was fortunate enough to be at the grand opening of that Starbucks. And it was a who's who of civic and city leaders and different people in the community. And I was able to meet the different people who were organizing that Starbucks. And they were totally impressed with what was going on and the future that was about to unfold. And Peter, I'm going to tell you something kind of crazy. I've been in Dallas since 1980. When I graduated from University of Oklahoma, the first thing I did was I started working down here at K104, and then I started working here at 105.3 The Fan and doing the TV at Channel 8 and Fox Sports Southwest. But I remember going to Redbird Mall all the time to shop. And there's something that a lot of people may not even know, that back in the day when Chick-fil-A first started, it was inside Redbird Mall. One of their original locations was inside Redbird Mall before they started branching out and having standalone of Chick-fil-A's everywhere. So I just as soon as I saw the Starbucks, I was like, yes, here comes some great stuff, some national brands that recognize the opportunity here. So Peter, again, I can't thank you enough for all the work that you're doing. And I know it's been kind of tough, because I'm sure when anybody comes up with an idea, and I'm sure you and the different people that you talk to, they say, okay, we should do this because it makes so much sense. The journey is always full of twists and turns. Can you talk about some of the initial things that you've had to, that you were surprised that you had to deal with, or some of the things you're still dealing with now that a lot of people don't even know what's going on that seems so logical, but then there's, you know, some red tape involved?
Yeah, so I would say that there's two big obstacles that we've been battling to overcome. One of them is very real estate centric, and that is just that the property itself was so divided up into small pieces, mm-hmm. that it was actually one of the reasons why it hasn't been redeveloped, is that it's very, very difficult to get your hands on everything. What we bought back 6 years ago in September of 2015 was just the inline portions of the mall and certain little splotches of the parking fields. But the old Macy's was separately owned, the Sears was separately owned, the old Dillard's was separately owned, the former JCPenney land was separately owned, and all the property outside the Ring Road, each one of those parcels was separately owned. There were 28 different owners.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taken us a long time, and we still don't own the whole thing. We own about 95 acres of it. I've lost track. It's either 12 or 13 different transactions to try to get everything back under one ownership so that we can control how the site looks. So that was one big, big challenge. The other challenge I would say is...
Before you go any further, I just thought of something. Sure. I want to bring this up because it's kind of interesting. Maybe you can solve this for me as well. Way back in the early 80s, we held a big pep rally for the Dallas Cowboys there, and I went into the back offices. We were me and some of the players hanging out back there before we went outside, and I noticed all the San Francisco 49ers stuff everywhere, and it turned out that the owners of the 49ers owned that mall, the DeBartolo's,
yeah.
Yeah, so what happened from that point to where you started trying to work on the development? Because I know they don't own it anymore, right?
No, they haven't for decades.
Oh, okay.
So the DeBartolo's were mall developers all over the country.
Right.
But even back then, when they developed it, they didn't own the anchor buildings. The way they financed it, and Valley View was done exactly the same way. In fact, I think most malls are, is that they would build the interior portion of the mall, and then they would get the anchor buildings to build their own buildings and own their own buildings. And they did that really because You know, back in the 70s, Sears was a high-flying stock. It was much less expensive for Sears to build its own building than for a private developer to build it and then charge them rent.
Okay.
And so a lot of these malls were built where the developer owned the mall and the anchors all owned their own buildings, and then they just all agreed to operate as one unit. And the problem is that when that happens, if the mall fails and you need to redevelop, it can be extremely difficult to redevelop because the agreement that they all signed said not only are we going to operate as one unit, but we all agree that our business is to be a regional shopping mall. And if you ever want to be anything other than a regional shopping mall, you have to get every single owner to agree to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so fortunately for us, that agreement had expired. And so we didn't have to go ask anyone's permission. But imagine if we wanted to convert Sears into a UT Southwestern medical facility, and we had to go ask a bunch of different people their permission to not be a regional mall. So anyway, the Bartolos owned it for a while. They were in the business of building things and then selling them and pocketing the profits.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold it. And, you know, sometimes I don't know how many times it got sold, but around the mid to late 90s, it really began to decline, and it got really handed from owner to owner to owner. And one of the owners is the one that foolishly decided to change the name to Southwest Center Mall and decorate it with a cactus motif. I haven't seen a lot of cacti in Dallas.
No, this is in Arizona.
Yeah. And those owners essentially decided that they were going to stop investing in the mall, milk it for cash.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how it started to decline, is that the owners were out-of-town owners. They didn't really, you know, their business model was to just skim as much cash off as they could and not reinvest in the mall. And that's how properties decline. And unfortunately, that's a very common story in underserved communities and in communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
The real estate just isn't reinvested in. The customer's not appropriately valued.
Mm-hmm.
And we came in with a very, very different perspective.
Can you talk about Terrence Maiden and his partnership in helping you along with this project?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it actually links to the other challenge I was going to talk about.
Oh, good.
Which is and it's more of a societal challenge, but I'd say I was shocked but not surprised by the resistance that people had sort of intellectually to the idea of a high quality series of amenities and a high quality environment in an African American community. I think that retailers have been and other developers have been so conditioned by our society to assume that if it's a community of color, it must be a community living in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
That it took a very, very long time to convince anyone that was simply statistically, factually untrue.
Right.
And that's why I will forever be loyal to Starbucks, because they were the first people who really understood, wait a minute, this is a money-making opportunity here. There is a market here that we are not serving because we've been so blinded by our own assumptions about the community.
Mm-hmm.
And if we would just take the time to actually look at the data through an unbiased lens, we would find that there's a lot of customers here that want Starbucks. And once Starbucks came, the dominoes began to tilt, and I think they've finally fallen now I think we are no longer having to spend a lot of time trying to convince people
right.
that there's purchasing power in the community.
Exactly.
But I learned a lot about the racial dynamic in our country.
Right, the stereotyping. Yeah, the assumption that majority of people of color may be in poor or lower income when that's not the case. It's all kinds of demographics that are all kinds of wealth, middle class, upper middle class, wealthy. Everybody of different colors comes in all kinds of economic backgrounds.
That's exactly right. But that is not how we are trained in this society to think.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing how sticky those perceptions are. So I will say that, I mean, while I, of course, understand that I'll never really understand the big obstacle we've had to overcome is helping people to overcome those initial
sure.
biases and assumptions. But it's been an incredible lesson for me just on the role that race plays in every aspect of life.
Exactly.
In ways I didn't expect. Which that's a good segue into talking about Terrence. You know, Terrence, when I first bought the mall, about 50 different people said to me, "Oh, you got to meet Terrence. You got to meet Terrence," because Terrence is a guy who grew up in the community. He understood the community. No one needed to. I didn't need to spend any time convincing him. He understood innately what the purchasing power and the desires and the standards of the community were. And he also happened to know a lot more about real estate than I did at the time. This was my first real estate venture. And so, I sometimes refer to Terrence as my daytime wife, but I actually think I'm more his daytime wife. We are definitely he's an important partner in the deal and has been from the beginning, everything from helping to determine the aesthetic we were going for. He's the one that brought Starbucks to the table initially. So leveraging the relationships that he developed over a 20-year career in real estate to bring people to the table so that we would even have the opportunity to make our pitch. And so he's a very, very important part of this development.
Yeah, he's a very, very sharp guy. And once again, it always helps when you have someone there who can help those who just don't know. I mean, sometimes people are just guilty of not knowing everything they need to know, not you in particular, but we're talking about people who, quote unquote, do not know the value or understand the desires of the people who live in a particular area and how it can all work out. So that it's always good to partner with someone just like that. Again, we're talking with Peter. We're talking with Peter Brodsky. He is the developer and philanthropist here in Dallas of the redesigned Redbird area. Peter, again, let's talk about the growth. I've been noticing, because I travel it all the time, 67 and I-35, the expansion is amazing. And I've seen some of the projections and the artwork. They're actually going to make somewhat of a Clyde Warren Park right there near the Dallas Zoo. And the completion dates are like within the next 5 years or so. And I want to know if that is like a burden or a hindrance, or is that something that helps you? Because I know the highways, you guys are located a certain way. And I also think about like in Arlington when they built AT&T Stadium and Globe Life Field, that sometimes the city had to give in a little bit and create some ramps and things. Can you talk about how the highways may help or hinder you in what you're trying to get done?
Well, the Southern Gateway project, which is the expansion of 67 and 35, is a critical part of what we're doing. And I do want to take a minute, I'll explain why in a moment, but I do want to take a minute just to give a shout out to Councilman Tanel Atkins, who
yes.
is the council member for the Redbird. He's the District 8 council member, which is where Redbird is, because he has gone to bat for us, I mean, countless times to ensure that we were getting the resources that we needed to make this successful. And one of the things that he has done is he has brought TxDOT to the table.
Excellent.
And, you know, one of the big flaws with the Redbird site in the past were two things. The first is that there's no Camp Wisdom Road exit northbound on 67. So it's difficult to get to the mall from the southern suburbs, which is a major target audience for us.
Right, Duncanville.
And then
Cedar
there's
Hill,
a
DeSoto.
Great I-20 exit either.
Mm-hmm.
And so as part of the Southern Gateway project, they are adding a Camp Wisdom Road exit northbound on 67. It's going to solve two problems for us. Number one is if you're coming from Cedar Hill, it's going to be real easy to zip onto 67, zip off at 60 at Camp Wisdom and be at Redbird. The second is that if you are on 20 and you want to get off at a convenient exit, you can now get onto 67 and immediately exit at Camp Wisdom rather than going all the way down to Cockrell Hill, which is a mile past the mall, mm-hmm. and coming back, you know, and tracking back a mile on city streets, which is inconvenient. And so Councilman Atkins brought them to the table. We got this exit put into the Southern Gateway project, and that is going to greatly enhance the accessibility of this development to more people. So it's a critical part of what we're doing. And then as for amenities such as the deck park outside the zoo, look, the more attractive amenities that can be put in Southern Dallas,
yes.
the better.
We yes.
are all going to benefit from that. We are all going to, a rising tide is going to lift all boats. And you know what? When people are done with the deck park, they're more than welcome to come down to Redbird to see our 1 acre lawn, to grab a cup of coffee, or we're going to have probably about 10 restaurants on the site where they can come and sit and have a good meal. So we welcome any amenity that folks are going to put into this community. It is so underdeveloped. It has been so starved for capital for mm-hmm. so many decades. It'll be decades before anyone is saying, oh my God, we don't need any more development down here.
Exactly.
That's not happening anytime soon.
It's there to have for anybody who wants to participate. Again, I'm imagining the reimagining of Redbird. I'm thinking Uptown. I'm thinking Shops of Legacy. I'm thinking Bishop Arts. I'm thinking of all these different areas where people can walk about, where they can live, the apartments. Can you talk about some of the areas that you're developing there where people can actually live on the property?
Yeah, so we've opened our first apartment building. We didn't develop it. We sold the land to a apartment developer called Palladium. Terrence, again, another example of a party that Terrence brought to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Terrence and I did a lot of research on Palladium, and we went to go visit several of their developments because we wanted to make sure that it met the quality metric. The metric I used was, you know, if my wife ever threw me out of the house, would I live here? And hopefully I'll never have to test out that theory.
Right.
It's a very, very high quality environment. It's a Class A building. It has structured parking. It's got the granite countertops. It has the beautiful public rooms, the business center, all of the things that you want in beautiful pool and courtyards. And importantly, there's a significant portion of the building that is reserved for people making 60% of area median income.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying very hard to create a place where people can live and live, you know, in a Class A manner, but also live in an economically inclusive community, which is what we're trying to be. So it has opened. They're opening it section by section. The whole thing should be opened in about 6 weeks. It's 100% leased already. And it shows that there is a demand in this community for high quality residential. And I believe it's the first of many such developments. We'd like to do a townhome development. We'd like to do another apartment building. There's lots and lots and lots of land at Redbird. And so I think the development can go on for a long time.
Exactly. And it's some of the most beautiful property in Dallas. The topography there is outstanding for those who don't know. We're talking again with the developer of Redbird, reimagining Redbird, Peter Brodsky. Peter, I was also looking at this data here about the Redbird Starbucks. It says that the patrons' income, the average income of the patrons of Redbird Starbucks is between $75,000 and $100,000 a year. That's just in the area. In other words, the purchasing power is there. And that's, like I said, another reason we're talking about this, because there's assumptions based on not knowing what kind of people are actually in this area and why this is a huge economic opportunity for this part of Dallas in the southern end. Are there any things you can tell us right now about how things are going? I know the pandemic has slowed down a lot of different businesses, a lot of different growth in some areas. How were you guys able to deal with that? And has it slowed you down a little bit? Has it caused you to pivot a little bit? Have you had to redevelop and create a new normal on some of the ideas you envisioned on your property?
You know, I have to tell you that the pandemic had almost no impact on our business plan. We were very, very fortunate. Of course, you know, back in spring of 2020, when it was really, really bad and we had to shut down for about 6 weeks, of course, that was disruptive. But you know, almost all of the store owners who are in the mall are individual entrepreneurs. And they were the ones that wanted to open back up the most quickly because that's how they put food on the table.
Sure.
And so we really did not suffer during the pandemic economically. And in some ways, it was an advantage because 2020 and 2021 are big, big construction years for us. Construction was always allowed to continue even during the height of the lockdown. And so we were able to make good progress. We also had decided that a very good use of the buildings we own would be to convert them into medical facilities. And so if there's one growth in industry right now, it's public health, given the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say the only thing that is really that the pandemic has really caused is some of the entertainment and restaurant concepts really put things on hold while their businesses were affected, but those are coming back now. And then the other thing is that just since the society has opened back up, I will say that the construction pricing is just crazy. I think we've all read about how the price of wood went up by 600%. Everything's on back order.
Yeah.
They, you know,
the supply chain.
Production.
Yeah, the
supply
chain
is all screwed up.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, and so the cost of construction has gone up. We've had some cost overruns there, but nothing, you know, nothing that is going to derail the train. More, I'd say, you know, a bump in the road rather than a blockade.
Exactly. Now, when I think of different developments and projects like this, I always think of different phases. And sometimes phases happen quicker. Sometimes the phases continue on and on and on. I'm in one example off the top of my head over there in Arlington, Texas Live, AT&T Stadium was completed in 2008. And then just last year, Globe Life Field was opened up and you got the hotels and whatnot over in that area in Arlington. What are the phases looking like for you guys? And tell me some of the steps of the phases where people can look forward to. And again, we know growth is changing all the time, and sometimes you want to hit certain marks and things happen like a pandemic. Can you talk about where you think this thing is going and the phases you're looking forward to?
Yeah, so I would say that phase one is going to be complete really by mid next year. And what I mean by phase one is that the facade of the entire mall building will have been completed. The infrastructure and the parking fields of the entire mall site will have been completed. Our lawn will be open, and we will have renovated the buildings that we own around the perimeter so that they're all brought up to the standard that we're seeking to create. And that's really phase one. It's essentially, I mean, there'll still be plenty of space to lease, et cetera. But in terms of the look and feel of the development, that will be set. Phases two, three, four, and five, to be honest with you, they could go on for the next 20 years.
Sure.
Because the fundamental economics of a development changes when the rents have gotten to, or the land values have gotten to the point that it is affordable to put structured parking onto the site.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we surface park everything because structured parking costs $15,000 to $20,000 per parking space to build. So if you want to build 500 parking space, a garage of 500 parking spaces, that's $7.5 million that there's no revenue associated with. It's much, much, much cheaper to surface park. But eventually we will get to the point where that is justifiable, as it is now in Uptown. Didn't used to be, but now it is.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, all those parking fields are going to be able to be developed, and we will get an even greater density of activity and people on the site. But, you know, think about how long that took. I lived in Uptown. I lived on Knox and McKinney when I moved here as a 25-year-old in 1995.
Hey, I was living over there, too. In 1995, I was living right there in Uptown off of McKinney. Sure was.
Shoot, I might have seen you at that Tom Thumb that you...
Yes, that was the spot right there off of Lemon.
Yeah, so anyway, think how long it took for that.
You know, yeah.
It's now been 25 years. So, 10, and look at Victory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was involved in the building of the arena when I used to work for Tom Hicks,
mm-hmm.
back in the late 90s, and it was just the arena. Now it's all these huge buildings.
Yeah.
So that I expect will happen over time. But you got to be patient. The area has to grow into it. And so I don't know what's going to come after phase one. I think what will probably happen is that we'll take a breath after phase one, let phase one settle in, let the investment thesis prove out that in fact, all these businesses that are opening are in fact successful. And I think over time, then we will begin to develop a lot here, a lot there, and over time, you'll see things get more vertical. I would say the one thing that we're really, really that we would do right now if we had the opportunity, irrespective of whether it's in phase one, in plan for phase one, is if we could get a grocery store,
mm-hmm.
we would add a grocery store into phase one.
Yes, that's only logical, especially for that area. I mean, there's so many families over there. That just makes so much sense. Hey, Peter, I cannot thank you enough for joining us. Is there some more information where people might want to look at it online? Is there a website for Reimagine Redbird where people can find out more information and keep up with the project?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got a website. It's www.redbird-dallas.com.
Fantastic. Peter, we got to get you back on the show again.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity. It was great to catch up with you. And anytime you've got some time for me to talk about Redbird, just call me on the line. Call me anytime.
That'll work. Thank you so much, Peter Broski. He's the developer of Redbird. And joining us right now is Amy Razor from the Fort Worth Better Business Bureau. How are you doing, Amy?
I'm doing great.
Amy, it's always a pleasure to talk to you because there's so many things going on in the world of business, online, in person, and not just in the Fort Worth area. You've got all the information on what people need to be aware of, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I heard the scammers are out there again. This time they're trying to get after homeowners with construction stuff or pavement. Please fill us in.
There are so many things going on. Yes, there are asphalt paving scams, as well as any kind of home improvement. There's been a lot of that going on, either with people being home and wanting to make improvements or with repairs from the storms earlier this year.
And, you know, it's like people are vulnerable right now because literally everybody's having to deal with, like you said, it was a summer of more rain than people expected.
Mm-hmm.
We had the grid situation back in February, and there's still people trying to get things right. A lot of people had swimming pools. And I mean, so what are the things that you should help people to watch out for and how they can be careful?
Several things. So with contractors, what you want to do is make sure you have everything in writing and that there are detailed information and contracts, and that everybody is aware of everything in the contract and that it's signed off on by both parties. One of the things that we see is that they will tell you they have a surplus of supplies, and that they'll give you a discounted rate for things they have left over from a previous job.
Yeah.
So that is always a red flag. Watch out for that. Another thing that they will try and offer is to work with your insurance company directly. You don't want to do that either. You want to make sure that you are the one communicating with your insurance.
You know, so why you brought that up, oh, the extra inventory. I remember back in the day, I was at a gas station minding my own business, and I got scammed by somebody that said, hey, we work at so-and-so, we got some extra speakers in the back of our truck. We just have it in there in this box, and the box was full of rocks.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I mean, I was like, that's when I learned there's no such thing as a good deal. You just got to be careful about anybody that says, hey, we got some extra supplies here. When people call the Better Business Bureau, are they complaining or are they warning people?
They're usually warning people. When we take complaints, they're typically about a specific business, and we work through that process with the business and the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
However, we do have what's called Scam Tracker on our website, and that is where people can go to either report something that has happened to help warn others, or you can look in there and check and see what's been reported in your area so that you can be prepared for it to happen if it happens.
So how can people find the Scam Tracker?
It is at bbb.org/scam tracker.
Oh, that's simple enough. I know.
Yes.
I know people go online and check out different things, and people have neighborhood apps as well. So I bet you guys get a lot of people going over there just to peruse.
Absolutely, and it is a great resource. You can zoom in as far as your neighborhood and see what's been reported, by your neighbors, or you can zoom out and see what things are trending across the country.
Are there any scams going on with back to school?
Oh, my goodness, yes. We've got several different things going on there. The top thing remains online shopping, and that is people getting scammed out of their information, making payments through sites that are not secure, and then their information becomes vulnerable, ordering items and not receiving them. Back to school. So, at Christmas time, there's always the gift. The thing that everybody's trying to find and hunt for. Well, in back to school season, it's that supply that's elusive and difficult to find. And so what we see sometimes with that is people will buy them up and get a good stockpile of them and then try and sell them to people that are stressing about the fact that there's this thing on the list that they can't find. And so often they'll either overcharge. So that's a price gouging situation, or they will promise the item and then it's never delivered. So you want to make sure you're on a secure website, and that will have an S at the HTTPS, means it's secure, and there will also be a lock symbol. And those are important to look for when shopping online.
Did I hear your bodyguard in the background? Who is your pet? Everybody loves pets.
I've got two dogs. Their names are Reese's and Dakota.
That is wild. We used to have a dog named Dakota. That was our family dog.
Really?
We had a standard poodle named Dakota.
Aww,
what kind of
cool.
what kind of dog is is Dakota for your dog?
Dakota is a COVID puppy.
Mm-hmm.
One of those decisions we made, like many others, to get another pet during this time. We do not know yet. He was a rescue. And so we will know when he gets neutered,
mm-hmm.
And they will do blood work and let us know at that time.
That is fantastic. Is he potty trained? Is he house trained yet?
Doing pretty good. He's about 7 months old and just absolutely sweet.
You know what I found out? You mentioned he's a pandemic pet. I found out about this, and it's so true. A lot of people who had pets in their household while working at home, or the families at home during the pandemic, especially last year, they found so much comfort with the pets, and the pets were getting so much love. It's almost like it made everybody relax even more as far as dealing with all the different things going on. Have you found that way in your house as well?
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun to be able to put your energy in something else, to focus on that new life and welcoming them to the family. But to circle back to scams, there are a lot of pet scams out there as well.
Please tell us. Please tell us.
Yes, and especially during this time when people have been interested in growing their fur baby family. What happens if people see or find an animal online that they decide they want? and oftentimes they're looking for a specific breed when this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that much of the time it is a stock photo. That's not an actual animal that is available. You often end up paying very high prices into the thousands to, you know, receive this pet and coordinate the delivery or receiving of the pet, and then it turns out that there is no such animal.
Oh, wow.
That happens a lot, and it's heartbreaking because the family gets very excited about, you know, this dog or cat that they've been looking for, and it doesn't come to fruition.
So what can people do to avoid being deceived like that? What kind of things can they do to background check these businesses or operations?
Yeah, try to find other people that have worked with whoever you're looking for, you know, working with to find the pet. Make sure that there is a meet and greet with the animal before you decide to adopt them and make them a part of your family. A lot of times, I mean, that's important anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So that you know that, you know, their personality is the fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to think you're coming home with, you know, this precious little sweet thing, and it turns out to be a nightmare, which does happen.
It does happen, yeah.
So you want to have that meet and greet to make it a good fit. And then you want to work with someone that does interview you as well. You know, when you're working with places that have pets available, most of the time the legitimate ones are going to be interviewing you to see if you're a good fit for the pet. They're going to ask about what kind of yard you have, if they're going to be an indoor pet or an outdoor pet, and that's going to let you know that they very much care for the animals and what their future is going to be.
We're talking with Amy Razor with the Fort Worth Better Business Bureau. You know, there's some people who might get scammed when not just the delivery of, let's say, products you order online, but food. Have you ever run across people who say, there's somebody that's actually scamming, they're pretending to be delivering food? Is that new?
Yeah, that could be true with any delivery service. Again, look at who you're doing business with,
sure,
what their customer reviews look like, to make sure that you know they're legitimate and that people have enjoyed their service and not had issues. Again, it's the same kind of thing where you order something and it's never delivered.
Mm-hmm.
Also with the contracting supplies that we talked about, what you order and what you receive might be two very different things, and the quality of what you're receiving compared to what you thought you were going to get might be very far between.
Oh yeah, it's literally amazing what is happening with people nowadays. Maybe it's because of social media. Maybe it's because of, like I said, we're still dealing with the pandemic. But there's a lot of creative people on the wrong side of the law out there, and
they would use their powers for good.
Exactly, it's like they're trying to do something. It's like you're going to get busted. You're going to get caught. Is there a story that you heard? Someone called into you guys or sent you an email and you said, I cannot believe this happened to this person.
Yeah. So a lot of what has really, to my mind, been heartbreaking are the employment scams.
Oh, yeah.
And so people, you know, may have lost their jobs during the pandemic due to downsizing and closures and things of that nature. And so they're looking and they're finding, you know, opportunities. This is also true with college students that are preparing to go to college. They want to find something that they can earn some extra money, but not have a committed, you know, 9-to-5 schedule that they can do on their own time. So we had a young lady that was going to college that was approached about being a secret shopper and asked to, you know, go to these places and then write a description of what the service is like.
Mm-hmm.
And so she signed up to do this thinking, oh, that's something I can do on my own time when I'm available, you know, still have time to study. And what ended up happening was they sent her a check in the mail before she had even done any work. That's the first red flag for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Checks can be manipulated these days to the point where they look so absolutely legitimate that the bank can't even tell that they are fake checks.
Until they bounce.
Right.
Oh, boy.
So the check, you know, was deposited, and then they reached out to her and said, okay, we need you to take $1,000 of the money that we sent you and go and buy gift cards. And as soon as she heard the word gift cards, she knew it was a scam and reported it to us.
Thank goodness.
But this is happening all over with people thinking that they're finding legitimate work, doing things that they can do from home, being sent money to buy supplies to do the job. And then it turns out that it was a scam and that check bounces and then they're out the money.
So a red flag for a lot of people just casually when you hear something about, and it involved gift cards, that could be an indicator something's not quite right.
Absolutely. Anytime you hear the word gift card, you need to pump the brakes and figure out what's going on.
You know, you mean, I was just going to say, you mentioned the fake checks. Are there scams involving stimulus checks? Because, you know, the government is taking care of a lot of people with the stimulus checks. And I'm sure there's side, quote unquote, businesses trying to manipulate that situation.
Absolutely. They're trying to get a hold of people's money. A lot of identity theft issues. And so that's, you know, you get those Social Security or IRS calls, and I can tell you for sure neither one of those organizations are going to call you.
Repeat that again. The IRS will not call you.
They will not call you. Neither will Social Security. They are not going to call you. They are going to reach out to you via mail if there's anything that's going on. So if you do receive something that seems fishy, you call them. They will not call you.
Exactly. And I can imagine the heartbreak of people counting on a stimulus check or someone saying, hey, I can help you get your stimulus check. Those things don't happen, right?
Nope, they do not. And they're going to probably ask you for your bank account and routing number so that they can help you get the funds deposited directly. And then you've given away the keys to your kingdom.
Yeah, you do not want to go there. Have we left out any other scams that people need to be aware of, especially this time of the year? It's August going into September, the fall. I mentioned the schools. I mentioned stimulus checks. I mentioned homeowners and swimming pools and people hearing stuff online. And we even mentioned the pets. Have I left out anything else that's important?
One new thing that we're seeing are QR code scams.
Really?
Which is really interesting.
I can't even imagine that.
So during the pandemic, most restaurants transitioned to a QR code.
Sure.
To get the menu rather than having, you know, things that people touch, you know.
Right.
That they have to worry about cleaning, or they did paper menus that they could throw away. But the scanning of the QR code has become a really popular way of doing business. And so what we're seeing is that people are creating fake ones to basically fish and get people's information and get you to enter, you know, personal information because, you know, you need access to this site or that. And that's not going to be the case with a menu. It should pop right up in your phone and you shouldn't have to enter any personal information. So if that does happen, you know, exit out of that and don't provide any personal information.
This is so wild because sometimes things you never think about, that could be a scam. How do you kind of talk to your teenagers or your kids who have their phones and cell phones and laptops about possible scamming? What kind of advice would you give to parents for your kids out there who might have a credit card access?
Absolutely. Very good question. So that is a hot topic right now. We really want parents to be communicating with their kids. My kids got phones for the very first time here a few months ago, and my daughter's always like, Mommy, who is this and what do they want, you know? And they're like, hey, you know, click this link to receive your free PS4 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, never click the link. You know, if you get a text from someone you don't know, delete it, you know, remove it, block the contact. But there are predators.
Yeah.
Out there as well, you know, that are posing as, you know, other kids playing the game, but really trying to get them to disclose personal information. Where do you live? How old are you? You know, even things like what's your phone number, what's your address. Thankfully, a lot of those games block the ability to share that kind of information. But as a parent, you want to make sure that you have all of those settings on. And if it's connected to a credit card, that your ID or your face ID, your thumbprint is required for the purchase to go through.
Amy, you're a wealth of information. Once again, what's the website for people who want to look online with the Fort Worth Better Business Bureau?
BBB.org. It geolocates to where you are and gives you the most accurate information for where you're located.
Amy Gate, thanks again for joining us. And I want
My
to thank
pleasure.
Everyone for listening to Better Living. I'm Chris Arnold. Be sure to tune in next week as we highlight other organizations and events happening right here in DFW. So long, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.